We read this past Shabbos, we read about the death of Sarah, Abraham's wife. And basically, as interesting as the portion is called the life of Sarah, Chaye Sarah is the name of the portion. Ironically, we don't have to go too far. The first verse in the Torah talks about the death of Sarah. She lived 127 years. So what do you mean? So it should be Mesa Sarah. It should be the death of Sarah. Why are we calling it the life of Sarah if she's dead? So the rabbis tell us a general principle in life that righteous people, even after they pass on, are considered living. Because why? As long as you continue in the legacy of your parents, friends, whoever it might be, anyone, if you continue learning from them, so therefore they're still living. Like one of the great rabbis was asked about, what does it say on your grandfather's tombstone? He says, number one, his grandfather was dead already for a while. He said, my grandfather never died because I'm always learning his books. And I don't even know. I never went to the cemetery. But the point being is, and that's why we actually say in our prayers on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, in the prayers it says, the books of the living and the books of the dead are opened up. So I understand the books of the living. You live the year, it's Rosh Hashanah. God's going to have to make a decision what's going to be for the coming year. But if a person's been dead for 15 years, why do you have to keep on opening up the book? Like, it's pretty hard to do something when you're 6 feet under. And hopefully you're already, the body decomposed and you had atonement already by then. So the answer is because it works in both directions, but let's talk the positive. So let's say in terms of, Rav Aaron Cutler, I don't know if you ever heard of him, he's one of the rabbis who started, let's say, the Lakewood Yeshiva, which is Cutler. Actually, Cutler.
Is it spelled the same way?
I know he spells it with a K.
K-O-T-L-E-R.
Yes, I'm saying, yeah, I'm just giving him because it started off as a very small yeshiva in Lakewood, New Jersey. And now it's one of the biggest yeshivas in the world. But forget about being the biggest, they have branches all over. And whether it could be Chabad, it could be Eishet Torah, you know, pick your name, Rabbi Soloveitchik. The point being is that he had many students, they opened up new, so every year, wow, Lakewood opened a new branch. This student taught 1,000, so therefore you get a continuous reward. It's not like it stops when you're dead. Obviously, physically, I can't do anything myself. If I gave it over to students, friends, anyone who was in contact with me, and I left an impression, and they're doing good deeds because of me, not only because of me, but I played a role in it. So therefore, it's a continuous thing. So that's what I mean. Righteous people, even when they're living, they're still alive. Of course, we're not talking about physically. In other words, I'm not in the Chabad camp that the Rebbe's still alive. I'm saying is, but the point being is a person's dead, but you're dead, but you, as long as your message remains, you still continue. That's why it's called Chaye Sar, even though the verse starts off with the death, but nevertheless, that's what it's all about. It's continuing a legacy. So that's how the portion begins, and then Abraham spends a lot of time looking for a special burial plot. Was Sarah the first person to die? No, of course not. But obviously, Abraham was looking for a Jewish cemetery. He could have, because as the saying goes, you live like a Jew, you die like a Jew, and you get buried like a Jew. In other words, you have your own cemetery. So therefore, the basis goes back to Abraham. He just came back. It was so much going on, and they were. You know, he was a manipulator, Ephron, and he ripped him off. You know, he's just the opposite. They compare Ephron, he's the person who Abraham bought the plot from, So we say in the chapters of our fathers, Emor ma'at, say a little and do a lot. In contrast to Ephron, what? I'm not going to charge you. Among friends, take it free. And he charged him like 10 times the price at the end. So some people talk the talk, but then ultimately, you know, it's all talk when it comes. They charge you triple, you know, whatever it is. But Abraham was one the opposite. We're supposed to speak a little bit and do a lot. So that's the contrast between Abraham and Ephron. So either way, so he spent a lot of money for the cemetery, and that's where all our tradition is. Where is this cemetery? It's in Hebron, Maras HaMachpelah. It's, you know, right now, it's a common visiting. Well, at the moment, it might be a dangerous place to go based on the situation. But we have it, and in fact, because of COVID, usually this past week, Chai Yisara, the tradition is many people spend Shabbos in Hebron and they go over to Maras HaMachpelah, you know, they spend, because this is the week, and also this is also in many places, it's called Chevra Kadisha week. In other words, they honor, again, because Avram's spending all the time with Sarah getting her ready for the death. So, again, there's two different customs. One is this week, because it's Chaye Sarah, Abraham spending all the time preparing for the death, for the burial of Sarah. And there's another tradition in Purim time, actually a week before Purim, the seventh day of Adar, which is what happened on the seventh day of Adar. It's Moshe Rabbeinu. Moses was born on Zion Adar, but that's not why. But he died on Zion Adar, and therefore, what do we do? Who buried Moses? God buried Moses. We don't know where Moses is buried. So therefore, that's when it's just like God does a chesed, acts of loving kindness. So the Chevra Kadisha, who does tireless work. So those are different. But then, practically, you could have it any day you want. I'm just saying that's the custom. Usually they pick one day a year. So some pick this Chaye Sarah because of the connection with the burial plot. And others pick by Moses that God, this way God took care of Moses. We have to take care of anyone else who needs a proper burial. So that's why these weeks was special. So it says, Abraham went ahead and he made, so we see, there's a special concept of a Jew having a separate burial place. So, you know, in most communities, usually every synagogue has their own cemetery. So the temple has theirs, Beit Jacob, Addis Israel, and we even have a fourth one, GOI, Granddaughter of Israel, has, again, and the assumption is that people who, not that the assumption is true, but the assumption is that basically because you have different customs or different things how to bury people. So the assumption is people who go to similar synagogues are similar, and therefore you're buried in the same, you know, with the same level of observance or good, you know, whatever the case may be. That's where the custom. So in Toronto you have, it's much bigger. So you have, of course, you have a lot of Jews who aren't affiliated with synagogues. So of course, independently, you have Jewish. So obviously in Hamilton's, and then you have a pick, you know. I think they usually switch. They go when someone needs a burial spot. So one time they ask Addis, the other time the temple, you know. So and whoever has more room or if the person was Orthodox, then maybe they, you know, however they work it. But generally speaking, you can get buried in any Jewish cemetery. The custom is different communities or synagogue. Back in Europe, when you had one community, there was one. Cemetery, and that's it. In fact, interesting. Guess first, where is the biggest? This one, the first question's easier to guess right. The second one will be harder. Where is the biggest Jewish cemetery today?
New York.
New York would be a good guess, but somewhere, what would be the other guess?
North America, on this call, or Europe as
well? Yeah, no, in North America, yeah. But Israel, I'm talking about. Israel has the biggest Jewish burial, but let's put Israel aside. So actually, in actually, at least at one point, the second biggest cemetery was in Warsaw. Mm. And the question is why? Because when you go to Warsaw, not that I've been there, but my wife has, is you have people who were buried in Warsaw who didn't live in Warsaw. You have a lot of great rabbis, or not just rabbis, great, you know, even secular Jewish philosophers. You find what's unusual, and I'll say why. I'll tell you why it's not unusual. What's unusual is they're not even buried where they lived. So what happened was like this. The reason is because historically speaking, Warsaw had the best medical care and hospitals. So wherever you were in Europe. So you used to go to Warsaw. So now the custom would be wherever you go to, you'd come back and get buried in your hometown. But the practice was then is if you died in Warsaw, you got buried in Warsaw. So it turned out that you have many famous secular Jews, religious Jews. They're all buried in Warsaw because of the medical care there. So I just thought it was an interesting trivia. That in Warsaw you have so many Jews who didn't live there. Why they're buried there? So we have a commandment to be buried in a Jewish cemetery, and one is not supposed to be buried in a non-Jewish cemetery. Of course, sometimes you have no option. Let's say you're in a situation where Let's say the choice would be being buried in a non-Jewish cemetery or doing cremation. Which is the lesser of the two evils? Let me just explain why we don't do cremation first. So we have a mitzvah of burial because our tradition is from earth to earth, that we came from earth and that's why the custom in Israel, the Jewish tradition, but we live outside of Israel, so we do it a little different. It's still okay, but what I mean is in Israel, you get buried directly in the ground wearing your tachrichim, wearing your special garments they put on. See, originally what happened was is people used to be buried in their clothes, so therefore people they probably didn't have them, but $1,000 suits or clothes, and then So Rav Yochanan instituted that, let's go back into that, but it used to be very expensive to have a funeral. So therefore, people used to just leave the bodies because they couldn't afford it, and then hopefully someone would come and bury. So Rav Yochanan said, it's not right. We're making it, the tradition is we have to make the funeral cost, I don't know what happened today, but we have to make the funeral cost very, low. And even if they can't afford, you have to bury someone anyway. And therefore, that's when he instituted it should be a uniform burial, whether you're afflicted with poverty or you're a billionaire. So therefore, the custom of, generally speaking, you don't have to, but the general custom is a simple wooden, because I always get, Rabbi, which coffin should I use? Should I get, they're offering me a $30,000 gold, in fact, I was in Benjamin's of Steels. They have one that costs like 30. I asked the guy, does anyone have a bike? He said, no, it's more just for show. But I say, because number one, I say, really, you shouldn't need a coffin at all. Really, the quicker the body decomposes, the quicker the atonement. So strictly speaking, in Jewish practice, like they do in Israel, you get buried. I think the Muslims might do it also this way. You go directly in the ground. And that's, you have to get, if you're in a funeral in Israel, you have to prepare yourself, because if you're not expecting it, it's very hard emotionally to see, to see the tachrichim, to see the person in there. So that's the original practice. But since we live in North America and we have rules to follow, we have to follow the rules. And the rules aren't going against Jewish law. You're allowed to put someone in a coffin. There's no rule against the coffin. It's just that it's better if you can. So what some people do is, some people make a fake bottom, which I'm not recommending this, but and then they actually dump the body, like the body goes all into the ground. But I'm not recommending, I'm not giving an opinion on that. I'm saying people do it. But what? Because they want to. They want it fulfilled to go directly in the ground. And then the body decomposes quicker. So what our practice is, you have a simple wooden coffin. And then what we do is we take earth from the land of Israel. I mean, we don't take it. Every Chevra Chadisha has it. And you put earth inside the coffin. So therefore, so you do that. Plus you make holes like in the coffin a little. So when you go in the coffin in the ground, it's like touching the ground. So that's how we fulfill our custom. So therefore, that's what we do in North America. We actually, because of the laws of the country, we have to follow. And therefore, that's what we do. But strictly speaking, and the reason why the custom is wood is because wood decomposes quickly. Strictly speaking, you could use metal. It's not the custom because metal takes, it'll be much longer for the body to decompose and all that. But strictly speaking, you could. But that's why the practice is to use something and that's why we don't have open caskets, because you want to remember the person when they were strong and vital. And now you don't want to see a person after they passed away and the body's decomposing. So our practice is not, we don't have open caskets. And it goes back to the times of Egypt with King Tut, with preserving the bodies, and different cultures. I know it's hard for me to get used to, because we have obviously non-Jews here, and especially Italians, they have open caskets, so they really build up the body, so it's just a different type of, they actually have different, number one, they do the, not just, but they do the wake first, so we do the burial right away and then Shiva. They have like a couple, I guess everyone does it a little differently, but they have it before the burial. Obviously, you can't show the body if it's already buried, so they do it in that order. So therefore, we assume it's honor to the dead to bury the person as quickly as possible. In fact, in Israel, in Jerusalem, the custom is you don't wait. Even they bury at night, and they do it right away. They don't wait, meaning they put up signs, like if the family is in New York or whatever, and you can't get there, you'll do without being at, maybe you'll catch it on Zoom. But in the custom, there's a custom in Jerusalem, see, in North America or outside of Jerusalem, everyone agrees you're supposed to get buried right away. So yet, sometimes we on a regular time, if someone passes away today, if we're lucky, we'll get the funeral in tomorrow. It's very rare that we're going to get it on the same, I don't mean in general, outside of Israel. Most, in New York, it is feasible if you have a lot. I know a friend of mine who, during COVID, his father didn't die because of COVID, but he happened to have it. And it was also for a reason. It was Erev Pesach. So he wanted to make sure you get the burial. So he said his father died. This you could do in New York because you have so many. His father died at 6 a.m. By 11 a.m., he was at the cemetery doing the funeral. Also, it was Erev Pesach, so they wanted to make sure that the burial happened before Pesach. Else you'd have to wait for Shiva until all the way after Pesach. See, actually, if you do it Erev Pesach and you sit Shiva for 5 minutes, your Shiva is over. That's it. It counts as 7 days. And not only that, but Pesach counts as 7 days. So therefore, you only have another like 16 days left. On Sukkot, it's even more. Because Erev Sukkot, you do it, so that's 7 days. 7 days of Sukkot is 14. And we have Shmini Atzeret, that's another 7 days. So you only have 9 days left after. In fact, that's what they point out. If you look in the Parsha, when it says Avram was crying over Sarah, so it has a small letter in the actual Torah. So why is there a small letter? So someone would say, because tradition has it, the Akedas Yitzchak, when he brought Yitzchak, that was on Yom Kippur. And when he got back home, Sarah died on Erev Sukkot. So they sat Shiva on Erev Sukkot, and so that's why it was a small chup, because he, instead of having 30 days to cry, he only had about 9 days. So that's an allusion to it. But that's so again, so if someone If you die, it's not when you die, it's when the burial is. So unless you have no plans of going to the funeral, then that's a different discussion. But assuming you're going to the funeral, so if a person dies Erev Pesach, but you don't have the funeral until Chol Hamoed, so then you have to wait until after Yentif to... You don't wait the week for the burial, but you do the burial. You don't start Shiva until after the holiday. But if a person even sits for 5 minutes, you know, you get buried at 4 o'clock Erev Pesach, and you sit for an hour, so then Shiva is over, and then you begin, So interesting, if a person dies on Yontif, and you get buried on Chol Hamoed, so actually what we do is, in outside of Israel, we keep an extra day. Like in Israel, like Shemini Atzeres and Simchas Torah is one day. We keep it. So actually what we do is then, to the last day of Yontif here, it's only rabbinical, so we don't sit Shiva, but we count it as day one. So interesting, you only have to do 6 days and change instead of seven. You only do six instead of seven because anytime we have a debate about what the rule is by mourning, we always go with the lenient view. So I guess they're assuming the lenient view is doing less than doing more, so therefore we always have leniency. So therefore, that's why we bury, because the quicker the body, and we go back from earth to earth. So cremation became popular, you know, a while ago. So therefore, so the rabbis spoke out for two basic reasons why we're against cremation. One is a legal reason and one is a theological reason. The legal reason is because, by definition, we assume if someone... So let's say you burn the body, and then what about, could you put the... Number one, would the cemetery let you put the ashes in? That's just a policy decision among cemeteries. I don't mean... Of course, if a person's burned in a fire, of course, you found the Holocaust, so nothing to talk about. Of course, you bury them in a Jewish cemetery. But someone who intentionally does, someone who knows, again, see, today it's a whole different world. Many people are knowledgeable. They'll come to you, so then, of course, in those cases, you're going to bury them in a Jewish cemetery. But let's say someone who specifically does it to rebel, they know it's the rule like that, so that's a debate. It's a policy issue. You can, but the question is, let's say you do put the ashes in the ground. Do you fulfill the commandment of burial? Why wouldn't you? Because we have a principle that when something is burned into ashes, it's no longer you anymore. In other words, I'll give you a practical example, not practical for us, but if for any Kohanim, someone who's a Kohen, so one of the things he can't do is go to a cemetery, which really means he can't come in, he can't be in contact with the dead, which it means. So therefore, let's say there was a dead body that was turned into ashes. So we assume a Kohen can come into that room, because we assume once the body's in ashes, it's no longer the body anymore. So similarly, even if you took the ashes and buried them, you won't get the mitzvah burial anymore, because it's no longer you. So if you do cremation intentionally, rebelling on, so then you're not going to get the command, you won't fulfill your commandment of burial. But secondly, there's a theological reason is, because again, it might not apply so much today, I'll explain why not, because back in the day when it started, it was a rebellion, meaning what? That, because in one of the fundamental beliefs of Judaism, we believe in the next world, that this world is, you know, we do our good deeds, and then we get rewarded in the next world. So we believe the next world is the eternal world. So therefore, you bury someone, and then you know, at Messiah comes, resurrection of the dead, whatever. So the person comes back. So why did people do cream? Why did it originally start? Again, it's different reasons today. It was a denial of the next world. It's closure. Like, what do you mean? I take the ashes, I throw him in the ocean, and that's the end of it. What next world? I don't believe in a next world. So cremation was a sign then to show, to negate the next world. Against other religions, but against our religion. So therefore, that's why it was looked upon. If you look at the literature 150 years ago, that's what they talk about. It's the worst thing in the world, because it was It wasn't the actual act which is the worst thing, but it was more what it stood for. So today, as I said, many people don't even know that cremation's not a Jewish thing. And even if they're doing it, they're not doing it to rebel. Either it's environmental, it's cheaper. So therefore today, it's the wrong thing to do, but obviously we're going to have a different attitude to someone who does it. We're much more tolerant, accepting, and we'll have the shiva, we'll let them be, because it's a different world. They're not doing it as a rebellion against, you live in a world, a lot of people don't know things, live and learn, unfortunately. I have cases here, Yaron.
I always assumed that the main purpose of cremation was that it would mean less upkeep of the body going forward. In other words, somebody's put in the ground, somebody has to maintain the grounds, maintain the grave site and so on. Whereas with cremation, as you say, they either sprinkle the ashes somewhere in the ocean or on the ground, or they store it. Some people store it in their home, but there's no upkeep to it.
Right.
I always thought that was
a problem. I agree, and that's why I'm assuming it's cheaper, because there's no upkeep. That's what I meant, because you need it. Because part of the burial fee is you're paying for people, they have to make sure not too much water. They have to mow the lawn. I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying yeah. So that was part. Again, I speak to different. I guess you could do things different. Ride in the car when I'm doing a funeral with the person in the set. So I like asking him different questions. One time I asked him, so why are so many people doing, I want to see what they tell me. I have my own opinions, but why are people doing cremation? I said, is it because it's cheaper? So he says, no. He says, the cremation could cost a lot more than anything. There's no set. You could do a cheap cremation, you could do it expensive, everyone has different reasons too. But today in general, we live in an open society, a lot of people don't know. So therefore, we're much more open, and therefore we're more lenient in burials and all of that, because it's not the person's fault. It's not their fault that they don't know what the Jewish view is, so we try to be as inclusive as we can. So therefore, the bottom line is, that's what we try, you try to educate. The bottom line is, we have no say in the matter. If someone wants to, number one is, you have to trust the right person, because you're not alive when you're going to be cremated. And in fact, I had cases where it was the spouse decided, like the kids didn't want the cremation. It wasn't even clear the spouse asked for it, but the living spouse who has the power, POA, so in other words, it could be you don't even have control of the situation. Also, it's not even the one who died even asked for it. So obviously you have to know the whole situation. I said, of course you do shiva the person. Even if they did it intentionally, I'd say to do shiva all the time, because today people, it's a different world. It's not a rebellion thing today. People are much more inclusive. They think, okay, it's nice to do that, but you could do other things. So be it as it may. So that's why, either because you're not fulfilling the mitzvah of burial if you're cremated, even if you put the ashes in the ground. And secondly, it was more of a theological thing, which isn't so much. It's still true. If someone does it to deny the next world, that would be true. But most people aren't doing cremation today to deny them. They're doing it environmental cost, the different reasons, and maybe there's some other reasons people do.
Another reason it's growing more from space. I mean, the
100%
takes a big space. How much space are we eventually?
100%. That's a big problem. We're wrestling, and that's why in different places they're talking about back in the caves where you had different levels. So they're in Israel. They're discussing it. It's a big problem. Space, and therefore, we have to try to work out to try to honor Jewish burial, but at the same time, we got to be realistic. We have to.
So what are they doing in Israel? In New Orleans, I remember, mm-hmm. they buried people.
Exactly. So again,
what are they doing in Israel?
Yeah. So similar. No, but not on top. But more. It's more like it's more in caves. In other words, the luck is you could be buried in the wall of a cave, because that's considered being in the ground. Like not of what are those things today? What are they called?
Mausoleums.
Yeah, mausoleums. So mausoleums is different. Mausoleums is you're not being buried in the ground, and it's not forever. You know, who knows what they're going to do with the mausoleum 100 years from now. So a mausoleum does play a role. Like, in other words, let's say, speaking of winter, it's not here yet, but I remember there were different days in the past couple of years where it was so cold out, the machines wouldn't work. So you couldn't, physically speaking, so therefore, so what do you do? So there's different options. You could go to Home Depot and get some earth and temporarily put earth over, or the other out, you put them in a mausoleum. If you have a place in Ewen Road to keep them, but like just temporarily, just to keep them in a place and then move them. But the mausoleum's above ground, so it would fulfill the commandment of not leaving the body over, perhaps, but it wouldn't fulfill the commandment of burial. So in the times of the Talmud, they talk about burying in caves. So the different levels, and in the caves, you could put people, you have to have a certain amount of distance in between. So we have to get very, so we might have to get very creative to find out, to keep, to, you know, to honor the Jewish tradition, at the same time, try to work out that, you know, that because we're running out of room, so to speak. She's saying the people get cremated or they put in mausoleums. I assume if you want to, you can. I'm sure they'll take your money in both directions, but I'm saying is, but yeah. Right. So a lot of places have mausoleums near the cemeteries now as another option. You know, I'm not saying Jewish cemeteries, but I'm saying is, yeah, you have a lot of those issues. So
before I was playing tour, I went to a cremation service there. And they have they take the urn and they store it. The people could either store it at home or they store it inside.
Yeah, I think I was. I think
now,
I.
How do they come back to visit? I'm not sure whether it's open all the time and they can come back to visit, or whether they have the phone and they can.
Right.
They want to come and sort of honor the deceased.
Right.
Right,
yeah.
I see it in the papers.
I mean, it's more and more, if the world, more and more, there are people, I'm not saying they don't know, they're doing it because they think, you know, they don't have an idea, but they're now getting back now. So now, that cremation, we learned from Abraham that the custom's always been a special Jewish burial spot, and we just went through how cremation's also not a Jewish. So let's say a push comes to shove, and obviously, you only have two options. Cremation, let's assume, I'll just give a hypothetical. During COVID, different, not in North America, but in places in Latin America, people didn't have options. They just burned the body, and that was it. But let's assume we could understand them more. Let's say it's during a COVID time, you got to make a decision room, and the choice is either we're going to do a cremation or we'll let you bury him right now in this non-Jewish cemetery. So which one would one choose? So yeah. So I'll tell you it is. So therefore, what I would say is, I choose the non-Jewish cemetery. Why would I choose that over cremation? Because cremation is permanent. Once you turn it into ashes, it's over. But a non-Jewish cemetery, so I'm hoping after COVID, whether it's I just gave a COVID example, but let's say when I'm dealing with non-observant Jewish people, so then let's say they're not interested. Let's say they want to do a cremation, but they're not going to. But maybe I could talk them into a cemetery. So the point is, if you're buried in a non-Jewish cemetery, it's not permanent. You could always take the body out or whatever and then move it into a Jewish cemetery. But once you do cremation, that's it, you're not getting the body back. So therefore, those would say you're probably better off. And also, if you're in a non-Jewish cemetery, if you're in a certain part, if you have your separate section, so it might not be considered a non-Jewish cemetery. Like if you're in your own section, it gets into how many feet away and that, but strictly speaking, it wouldn't be a non-Jewish cemetery. Also, the ways of working it out, where if you're far enough away, you know, if you have there's fences in between, so there are a lot of legal ways to be creative where you could technically be but really it's not a non, from a Jewish point of view. Obviously, practically, you're in the non, But from a Jewish legal point, as long as you're far enough away, you can work things out. But cremation is permanent, very unfortunate. You know, during COVID, people don't have it if it's an infectious disease around, and the concern, and that might be the law. If it's an infectious disease and it spreads, so then obviously we don't. Human life takes precedence. We're not gonna risk. That's why during a certain time, people did very little on the Tahara, because you're not gonna, doesn't make sense to risk the people who are alive to catch COVID from someone who, you know, so therefore you did the bare minimum just to get, you didn't go through the rigorous, again, so as always, you have to use seichel, you have to use common sense and figure out, you have to weigh the risk rewards and see what to do under a given situation. Yeah.
Rabbi, people that were murdered in the Holocaust, they don't have the bodies, they were buried. What do they do? Like, they just put up names, like in the...
Yeah, so if there are cases where they found the ashes, of course, but then, yeah, there's special Holocaust play where they put, let's say some people put it next to when they pass away, they put something on my mother or father that's just a matter of, and I think the chief rabbi in Israel, they picked the day, it's our next fast day coming up. I mean, the next one, it happens to be, this year it comes out actually on Christmas Day. Christmas is a Friday. But the Hebrew date is Asara B'Tevis. My wife's birthday is the 9th of Tevis. Her English birthday comes out over Hanukkah this year, December 14th. But so therefore, what they do is Asara B'Tevis was the day picked by the chief rabbinate as a day to remember. You say, it's called a Kaddish Kholi. So that's the day you pick. And it's like, so to speak, the Yortzeit, anyone who died during the, unless of course if you know, then you could pick the day, but most people have no idea, so they pick that day to say a Kaddish and do that type of thing. So that was, so that's why it's always been built in that a Jew lives differently, he dies differently, and that's always been the practice, and Chevra Kaddisha throughout, that to try to, they spent, so much time going back to the days of Abraham, how much sacrifice people went just to try to be buried, in a Jewish cemetery. So that's why, I would say a non-Jewish cemetery is better, because number one, you could try to make it where it's okay anyway, but if not, you could always, generally speaking, we don't inter bodies. Once we bury someone, it's permanent, with a couple of exceptions to the rule. When are you allowed to dig up the remains and move it?
If they have to redo an autopsy, they sometimes have to retrieve the body, they can test to see if there was poison in the bones.
100%, yeah. So that, hopefully they do.
If they're moved, sometimes the cemetery has to be moved. Quite a few people were moved when they built the mountain access. There's a cemetery and they have two people from there. Right.
Those are cases where there's no choice anyway, but we're in agreement you should, but obviously if they're moving the cemetery, I'm asking more is when you have an option to do it or not, but 100% what you're saying is true. Clearly, if the police need for a report to put, that's why, that's one of the cases we allow autopsies, to put the murderer to death. And I'll give you a classic case, what happened, in Israel, when they gave back different parts of the land, there were Jewish cemeteries, and they were afraid the Arabs were going to desecrate them, which they did. So the question was, taking out the remains first? It wasn't just with cemeteries; it was with synagogues also. That was always the question: what was better? Better for us to destroy the synagogue, or let them destroy? Taking, obviously, you took out all the Torah scroll. But, so those are cases where there's no option, so I'm 100%. But let's assume, cases where it's where normally you wouldn't have to do it, but when would you be permitted to do it? So there are a couple of exceptions to the rule. One would be the case we discussed. If you bury someone, let's say it happened more, it's less of an issue now, but it happened very frequently in Europe, was It was very hard. As I said, people died in different areas. So, and also there was different countries all the time changing which border. So it wasn't simple. It's not simple now, but it's to take a body from one country to another, like to work it out. So many times it took months to work it out. So let's say you planned on bringing someone back to your hometown, but it was going to take 6 months. So if you have in mind when you buried a person, it's only going to be temporary, so then you're allowed to take it out. So one, if when you buried the person, you knew it was only for a time, so then you're allowed to take it out. A second one is even if you thought it was permanent. But let's say you want to, let's say people have a family plot. So then you're allowed to take out, if someone was buried, let's say in Hamilton, and the family plot is in New York, you'd be permitted to even, you know, years later or whatever it would be to move the body. And the third one is to the land of Israel. If you want to take the body and move it to Israel, so those are the three exceptions where, of course, if the cemetery is moving or those, then you have to. But in cases where, not that you have to, but you're permitted to in those three scenarios, if someone is buried temporarily, so on the condition you know you're going to move the body, whether it's going to be a month from now or a year from now, or to move them into the family plot. Let's say, of course, if someone was buried, and unfortunately it happens, people get buried in the, you know, people get buried in the, it happened to me not too often, but let's say it was in one of the cemeteries here. So sometimes people realize it right away. We're about to do the burial, and one of the, like, wait a second, this isn't the right spot. So we had to like wait, so they had to like fill up, so that, you know, so people came back, you know, whatever, could have been 5 hours later. Like other times, after the burial, so then you undo it, you put the, you know, if you buried it by mistake, because that's like a temporary burial. So but generally speaking, when we do burial, it's usually permanent, and therefore the body decomposes, and then you get the atonement, and then, you know, whenever at resurrection of the dead, you know, whenever things are going to happen, so then you go up. But that's what we point out. It's chaye sara, it's the life of sara. Even though, of course, life physically has a finite end, whether it's 70 years, 80 years, 120 years, but ultimately we believe in the next world, that's eternal. And therefore, that's where if your friends, family, children continue the legacy of doing good deeds, studying, you know, Torah, keeping commandments, then you're always considered living, even, you know, even years after.
Rabbi, may I ask a question?
Sure.